Okay, I'm going to make another attempt here at recording a lecture. I apologize for the issues with lecture number 14. The audio there, I know, was impossible to listen to. So what I wanted to cover in this lecture, starting from what we looked at last Friday, we were looking at this clamping circuit in a CCM flyback, which was meant to deal with this overvoltage issue we saw. That when the MOSFET shuts off due to the stored charge and this leakage inductance, that would dump into the output capacitance of the MOSFET and cause this overvoltage spike, which could potentially be large enough to damage the device. So we looked at the implementation of a clamping circuit, first looking at just an ideal implementation here where we have a diode clamping the drain to source voltage of the MOSFET to some voltage source, VS, as our clamping voltage. Using our state plane analysis, we analyzed the behavior of this implementation. And what we found is that even though this was able to clamp our voltage to really whatever at this point, we could set VS how we want. If we set VS to be something fairly small, something close to our ideal peak voltage on the MOSFET, VG plus V over N, we end up with a large power loss in this implementation. And that's assuming in this case that all energy that goes out to VS is lost. That's not a given at this point, but when we look at real implementations, for example, if I make that an 850-volt Zener diode, then indeed all energy going out into that will be dissipated as heat. Other possible implementations will give us the same functionality, but we can put the Zener in different places so that there is a smaller voltage on that Zener, somewhat reducing losses because a portion of the current which goes out into the Zener diode actually goes back through the input voltage VG, and that energy will be recovered at the input source. Another possible implementation, instead of a Zener diode, we used a parallel resistor and capacitor, and used that resistor to burn off the energy while the capacitor maintained the voltage that we wanted to clamp to. Near the end of class last Friday, I mentioned this active clamp circuit. And I drew a couple of implementations of it. The first looks something like this, where we had a switch in series with a capacitor. And similar to the Zener diode in the RC case, I can also draw it in this kind of a configuration. For today's analysis, I'll analyze somewhat independently of the implementation. And I'll just kind of look at the voltage here at this node being VS. If I consider this first implementation with C1, that VS is the voltage on the capacitor. VC1 is equal to VS. If I want my clamping voltage here to be VS. If I look at this implementation 2, VC2, then what I have is VS is equal to VG plus VC2. So I'm going to analyze today just looking at really VS to be independent of these two. Just note that in one case, VS is the capacitor voltage. In another case, we'd have to apply an extra step here to figure out what the capacitor voltage is in terms of this clamping voltage. So this configuration looks strikingly similar to this one here, where I used the diode to implement my switch, but I said I needed this resistor here to burn off the energy in the capacitor. And that's because with this diode, I have energy flowing in only one direction. If I have any energy, any current going through this diode every period to perform this clamping action, and I don't have this resistor, that'll mean every period I have some average current flowing into this capacitor, and its voltage will rise up until there is no current, until there is no clamping action at all. With a switch here, which I'll implement with the FET, what I can do is control this current, let's call this IS, so that the average value of IS over one switching period is equal to zero, and thus my delta VS over one switching period is equal to zero. And I can have this circuit steady out at some voltage that I design for my clamping. Okay. The operation of this, I'm I'm going to look at drain to source voltage of the MOSFET, this capacitor current, I sub S, and down here I'll look at the current in the leakage inductor, IL. And on my state plane, I'm going to plot the normalized drain to source voltage of the MOSFET and the normalized current in this leakage inductor. Okay. So again, going through the intervals of the operation of this circuit, I'm going to have really six sub-intervals, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And at the end of my period here, this will be my TS on my time axis. And first 3, 4 sub-intervals are going to look very similar to what we've already analyzed. So initially, I'm going to start with my MOSFET on. As I shut it off, the current will ramp up. I will go through this resonant interval after my output diode turns on, clamp the voltage at some voltage VS. So this will be VS, and this value here is VG plus V over N. In these first two intervals, I don't have MS on. IL begins at the magnetizing current. I sub M resonates down and then begins ramping downwards. And the key operation of the circuit that we talked about last Friday is that rather than having an interval where the leakage inductor current ramps down to zero and then stops there, what I'm going to do is I'm going to allow the leakage current to go negative. If I continue my dotted line down, during this subinterval, the leakage inductor current is this clamping capacitor current. It's going to look something like this. At this point, I'll shut off my auxiliary MOSFET. Capacitor current will remain zero for the end of the period. Here I'll have another resonant transition followed by a ramping interval where I return to IM, and that will complete my period. And here what I'll see is during this resonant interval, I have a 0 volt switching condition to turn back on my main MOSFET. So to get these waveforms, going through these six sub-intervals, just to clarify things, what I want to do is sketch the equivalent circuit of the flyback on the following page, hopefully bring a little bit more clarity into why these waveforms are what they are. So we need sub-intervals 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I want to look at what's happening in this flyback converter. So in subinterval 1, when I begin this, I have my MOSFET on, and my magnetizing current, really, since I'm using a small ripple approximation here, and this is a large filter element, just looks like a current source, and my leakage inductor, LL, is in the circuit, but not doing much of anything because it's in series with a current source. To get to subinterval 2, what happens is my main switch, M, is shut off. So this is the transition that happens by some kind of active control. Gate driver is driven low to turn this MOSFET off. When it shuts off, what we'll still have in circuit is its drain-to-source capacitance. And initially, the rest of my circuit will look the same. Still have this IM current source and LL leakage inductance. What's going to happen then is this current source IM is going to charge my CDS capacitance, and my drain to source voltage is going to gradually begin rising. And this is going to continue until my voltage at this node becomes large enough to get a forward voltage on my output diode D1, and D1 will turn on. That'll take me into subinterval 3. And this happens when VDS goes to VG plus V over N, which is the voltage I need in order to turn that diode on. Once the diode turns on, the primary side of my circuit looks the same through this section. Still have my LL and my CDS in circuit. But the diode is going to clamp the voltage at the output to V, and if I reflect that back through the circuit, what I'll get is a inverted, because of the polarity of the transformer, voltage source V over N. This is going to do is it's going to effectively short out my magnetizing current, which will just circulate here in this loop. And as far as these elements go, I can just say this looks like a VG plus V over N source applied across LL and CDS. And this is my first resonant interval. This resonance that forms here, the fixed voltage source, and then my L and C, will continue until the point where my clamping circuit is activated. So this will go until my auxiliary switch. I haven't given it a name, but I'll call this guy MS, MS. I'll say this continues until MS turns on, either because my voltage has risen to VDS goes to my clamping voltage, which will forward bias the body diode and any real implementation of these devices. Here. Or here, or because my FET is actually turned on by a signal going to the gate drive. Okay. Once MS turns on, I will have subinterval 4 occur. My circuit in this subinterval looks like I am LL, CDS, all still in circuit. My output diode is still clamped on. And now I'll be clamped here at a voltage VS. So if I look here again, this magnetizing current circulates in a loop with this V over N source, so it kind of drops out as far as LL and CDS are concerned. CDS also drops out of the circuit because I have this capacitance in parallel with a voltage source. So I'm really, again, applying just a constant voltage across LL. And I could simplify this to look like just LL with a voltage VG plus V over N minus VS applied across it. Subinterval 5, my transition will occur when I shut that MS back off. So I turn off my clamping switch. That will return my circuit really to the same one I had in subinterval 3, where I'll have my same I am V over N, LL, and CDS. What it's going to do is, this is my resonant circuit, but I'm going to have changed the initial conditions, and I'm going to get a different resonant, a different portion of a resonance in this subinterval. This will continue until, really, I actively turn my main switch back on. When I do so, I'm not going to be back to the subinterval one quite yet because my leakage inductor current is not equal to the magnetizing inductor current. My output diode remains on. It still has forward current. So I'm going to end up with a circuit that looks like I am V over N LL, and my main FET is back on, shorting this out. So looking back at my operational waveforms, what I'm going to do is now sketch the state plane. In order to sketch the state plane, I have to give names to some currents here. I'm going to name my currents based on the subinterval they occur at the end of. So this will be I3, this will be minus I4, minus I5, everything else is IM. Here, this will also be I3 minus I4. And my voltages, I have labels for everything, every significant breakpoint. So looking on the state plane, I have in this subinterval one, both my leakage inductor current and my drain to source voltage are constant. So my drain to source voltage is zero. My leakage inductor current is IM. Put me at a point when I normalize JM on the axes here. And because both are constant, really my subinterval one is just a single point here on the state plane axes. And I will sit there as long as I'm in this subinterval. And I'll continue on to subinterval two when I shut off the FET. At that point, I am in a circuit that looks like this here, where I have a current IM charging the CDS capacitance that results in the drain to source voltage rising with the slope IM over CDS. On my state plane, that's just going to look like a rise in the MDS, my normalized drain to source voltage, with no change in the leakage inductor current. That continues on until I hit VG plus V over N. I'm normalizing again with V base is equal to VG plus V over N. So this will be 0.1 on my MDS axis. This is my subinterval 2. At the end of the subinterval, I turn on that output diode and begin a resonant subinterval where I have VG plus V over N applied to my LC circuit. So I'm going to resonate around a DC solution of VG plus V over N, which is normalized to 1 and 0 current. So this is the center of my resonance, my radius, what I will call R3, since I'm in subinterval 3 and I'm going to have multiple resonances, is here, and my resonance goes in a piece of an arc that looks like this. I go up to some point where I reach a voltage Vs. I'm going to normalize that, give it notation M sub S. This is where my clamp will be activated. Here, this is also R3. I'll give this angle a name, alpha. And that is my subinterval 3. In subinterval 4, I am going to begin ramping down my inductor current, looking in this direction. And as opposed to what we did before, where when I reach zero, the diode shut off in my passive clamp, my active clamp, I can allow that current to continue negative. And I'm going to continue from some value here, what we called J3, to some value here, what we called minus J4. And a couple notes about this. I said before, these passive diodes can turn on and allow the current to flow whenever my voltage VDS tries to exceed VS. And those diodes will passively turn on and begin this subinterval 4. And I can continue to let my inductor current flow through that diode as long as the polarity remains positive. So during this section of subinterval 4, I can have either my switch MS, being the channel of a MOSFET, or the body diode on. But during this section, once the current reverses polarity, I need MS to be on. The body diode can no longer conduct now that the current has changed polarity. So subinterval 4 continues for both the positive and negative portion of this section of the state plane. So this gives me a little bit of leeway in terms of my timing of that switch. I would like to turn it on right at this point, but if I'm a little bit late, as long as I turn it on before the current reverses polarity, my operation will still work. Mm-hmm. After subinterval 4, we are going to shut off MS and begin a new resonant interval with a radius R5, and I'm going to let this resonance continue until hopefully I go all the way around and reach zero drain to source voltage. So this will be R5. I'll give the angle here again a name, beta. So my subinterval 5. And if I can achieve this, if I can let the resonance continue until I reach zero on the MS axis, what that means is my drain to source voltage has gone all the way down to zero, and now I can turn on that main switch with zero voltage switching. This is our current minus J5 on the J sub L axis. At this point, I turn the main switch back on, and that's going to cause me to ramp up the inductor current until I reach back to my point for subinterval 1, and that completes an entire period on the state plane. So now that we've drawn this, what I want to do is go through and analyze the state plane through all 6 subintervals, writing the equations that we can derive from the state plane. Afterwards, we'll do our averaging step and get a complete solution to the active clamp flyback in CCM. Before I go on to the actual equations for the subintervals, one thing I want to do is derive the ZVS conditions. In this case, we're going to have 2 contributed from our 2 resonant intervals, subinterval 3 and subinterval 5. So for subinterval 3, this is actually a ZVS condition on my auxiliary switch. MS, turn on, zero voltage switching condition. So what I need, looking at my implementation for either of these, if this voltage here is VS and my VC1 is VS, I'll subtract that off and I'll have zero voltage drain to source on this auxiliary switch. If I turn on with zero voltage switching, I can eliminate a lot of switching loss mechanisms. Same applies for this alternate implementation. So in order to get that, what I need is for VDS to reach VS before I turn on that auxiliary switch. Looking at my state plane, that is I need my initial condition on the states at the beginning of subinterval 3 to have sufficiently high current J sub M so that I can go through this resonance and reach at least MS volts before I reach zero current on my J sub L axis. Essentially what I'm saying is I need R3 to be greater than this distance, MS minus 1, and R3 is equal to JM. So I need JM greater than or equal to MS minus 1 in order to achieve zero voltage switching from my auxiliary switch. Subinterval 5, this is going to be my main switch, M. Turn on ZVS condition. So in a similar fashion, what I need is for this resonance in subinterval 5 to carry me all the way to zero on the MS axis in order to be able to turn on the main switch with zero volts drain to source. It means is that this R5 radius needs to be greater than the distance here, which is just a normalized value 1. So what I need is R5 greater than or equal to 1. And I can write a couple different expressions for what this R5 is. I'm going to get into that when I do the solution for each subinterval, so I'm not going to worry about writing those on this slide. Okay. So as we go into solving the subintervals, again, begin by going interval by interval on my state plane, starting with subinterval 1. Subinterval 1 is just this point because my VDS and my IL aren't changing during subinterval 1. So looking at my state plane, I really get no equations from it. I just sit there, and I'm going to do so for a length T1, which will have some constraints on it in order to control the output power, make sure everything remains balanced, but we'll get those later by our averaging equations. So I really get nothing yet for my subinterval 1. Subinterval 2 is this linear ramping of the drain to source voltage of the MOSFET, the rate IM over CDS. That's going to contribute an equation describing the total change in that voltage. Total change is going to be the rate of change IM over CDS times the time T2 is equal to my delta V, which is VG plus V over N. As I go to normalize this, what I'll do is divide both sides by I base. Which will cause me over here on the left to have JM over CDS times T2 is equal to I base is V base over R naught. V base is VG plus V over N. So this will look like 1 when I divide this by V base times R naught. Then what I'll do is I will multiply my CDS over here to the right. What that's going to do is give me a R naught times CDS. So I'll have JM times T2 is equal to R naught, which is root LL by CDS times CDS. That is equal to root LL CDS is equal to 1 over omega naught. And I'll multiply this omega naught back over to the left, divide the JM over to the right. My equation will eventually look like theta 2, or T2 times omega naught. It's equal to 1 over JM. Okay. So that's my analysis, subinterval 2. Subinterval 3 is my first resonance subinterval. I'm going to get two equations, one relating the radius at the beginning and end of the subinterval, and one based on this angle alpha. So my alpha, I can write directly by looking at a triangle here. Alpha is going to be the arctangent of this side, which is ms minus 1, and this side, which is j3. And then r3, I'm going to have the Pythagorean theorem of those two values on this side here. And then just r3 is equal to jm. So I write my equations. Have is alpha is equal to inverse of ms minus 1 over j3, and r3 squared is equal to jm squared is equal to ms minus 1 squared plus j3 squared. Really take this section of it as my equation contributed, and then my alpha equation. Okay. Subinterval 4, it's a little bit different. We again have a linear interval, but we are ramping the current down from a value J3 to a value minus J4. Looking at our equivalent circuit, and I can simplify all of this when I'm just looking at the behavior of the resonant circuit. ES is shorted across CDS, so it stays constant. Only the current in LL is changing. And to look at the current in LL, I can rewrite this as a circuit VG plus V over N LL ES, where my current IL is in this direction. So VS is some voltage larger than VG plus V over N. It's my clamping voltage. It should be above the value that I need to maintain normal operation. So this circuit, VS being larger than VG plus V over N, is going to cause the inductor current to ramp down in the direction that I've drawn it. So my equation for this, it's going to be kind of the dual of what I had in subinterval 2. So now what I have is VS minus VG plus VG plus V over N over LL times the duration of the subinterval T4 is equal to, still in my time domain, so this is equal to I3 plus I4. And I implicitly here did the negative of my slope, since I have a negative slope, to get this to be a positive value, I3 plus I4. So as I normalize this, I'm going to again divide both sides by J base. What I'm going to get is J3 plus J4 is equal to, normalize this thing, I'm going to get ms minus 1 times, when I bring my r naught over with ll, that's going to give me an omega naught, and I end up with theta 4 here. Okay, subinterval 5 is going to be another resonant subinterval. Here I'm going to again get two equations, one based on R5 and one based on theta. For R5, I'll say that's ms minus 1 squared plus j4 squared over here on the right. On the left, it's 1 plus j5 each squared. So this will look like R5 squared is equal to ms minus 1 squared plus j4 squared, and that's equal to 1 squared, which gives me just back to 1, plus j5 squared. And then for beta, what I'm going to do, just to show a different way of solving this, instead of doing pi minus the two arctangents of the outer angles, what I'm going to do is just the sum of the arctangents of these two inner triangles, which are going to have really the same expressions for the sides that were just squared in the previous equation. So this will look like arctangent of ms minus 1 over j4 and arctangent of j5 or 1 over j5. So this is equal to arctangent of ms minus 1 over j4 plus arctangent of 1 over J5. And my last subinterval 6, what I have going on is, again, just a linear ramping of the inductive current. The circuit I'm in looks like what we drew here. This is just Vg plus V over N applied across LL. So my equation is going to look like Vg plus V over N over LL times T6 is equal to I5 plus Im. As I normalize, what I'm going to end up with is J5 plus Jm over here is equal to normalize Vg plus V over N and just get 1, and my R0 and LL combine again to give me theta 6. Okay. So my complete period is composed of my two resonant subintervals and my four linear subintervals. So I will again have an expression for the complete period, which looks like 2 pi over f is equal to theta 1 plus theta 2 plus alpha plus theta 4 plus beta plus theta 6, which brings that theta 1 back into my equation set, since I didn't have any equation contributed from subinterval 1. Now, the next thing I need to do with my analysis here is really the averaging step that we looked at in the buck converter by just averaging the alpha current. And really what we were doing there is saying for the buck, I had my two switches, my inductor, which in my ZVS buck was a resonant element with a large ripple across it, was considered in the state plane, and then my output capacitor going to my load. So Weedy wrote an equation for the average value of I out, and that we did by averaging the inductor current over one switching period, and we said that these two are equal. That's inherently true because we know that the average current in the capacitor, I sub C, over a switching period is equal to zero if I'm in steady state. If this condition is violated, then I'm not in steady state. The capacitor voltage is changing. So we did it as just averaging the output current, but what we're really doing is applying capacitor charge balance, our old 481 principle, to what was the only large filter element in the circuit, C. Once we reduce the size of L in order to make it have 100% ripple and participate in our resonance, it's no longer some large filter element that we're assuming was constant valued. Here in our active clamp flyback, we have now multiple elements which we are assuming are large filter with constant values. Lm, my output capacitor C, and my CS, where CS is my C1 or C2, depending on my implementation, whatever capacitor is holding my clamping voltage VS, are all large filter elements. What we're actually going to need to do is apply averaging to all three. We're going to say that the average current in each of the capacitors is zero, and the average voltage on the inductor is zero. So I'm going to start by averaging the capacitor current, CS. We could write an equation for it, but we've got it plotted here, IS. And looking at the plot of this current, what we can say is that because this is some linear interval with a constant slope, the only way I can get this thing to be zero average is if I3 is equal to I4. This comes from our charge balance on this capacitor, which was one of the motivating factors for this active clamp circuit. So we need to have zero average going out into that clamping capacitor. Otherwise, we're supplying net energy into it. We're going to have to dissipate that energy in some way. So what this gives us is really quite a simple equation that the average current I sub S over TS is equal to zero is going to give us that I3 is equal to I4, or J3 is equal to J4. It's also going to have an interesting implication on our circuit that simplifies some of our equations. If I look here at R3 and R5, these are both made up of either J3 or J4 and an MS minus 1 on the two sides of my right angle triangle. MS minus 1 is the same, it's shared, and if J3 is equal to J4, that means that R3 is equal to R5, so really only have one radius in the circuit. Okay. We got a lot of nice things out of averaging that capacitor. Fortunately, the magnetizing inductance and the output capacitor are not going to be as easy to solve just by insight, but not too bad. So this was my cap charge balance on CS. Now I'm going to apply volt second balance on LM. This one, I'm going to say that the average voltage on the magnetizing inductance over one switching period is equal to zero. And this is important, not only so that I can apply my analysis, but also if we have a circuit where we don't have an average voltage of zero on the magnetizing inductance of our transformer, what will happen is that transformer will saturate. It will have net volt seconds every period. Those will accumulate over many periods. Our magnetizing current will run away and our transformer will saturate and cease to operate as a transformer. It's very important that we always maintain zero average volt seconds on the transformer. And that'll be particularly emphasized as we get into AC link converters in the coming lectures. So to make it a little bit easier to solve this magnetizing inductance, what I'm going to do is I'm going to plot the magnetizing inductance, the voltage on the magnetizing inductance, over my six subintervals, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. In subinterval 1, I had my FET on. There could potentially be some voltage drop on this leakage inductance, but it's got a constant current I am flowing through it, so we know that voltage must be zero. So I just have on my VM the full input voltage. During subinterval 2, when I charge this cap, it's going to gradually change and ramp from positive VG to negative V over N. And then I'll keep that negative V over N through all the remaining subintervals. So if I plot this VM, what it's going to look like is VG, subinterval 2 will ramp down to value minus V over N. That continues through subinterval 6 and then pops back up. So if I am writing an expression for the average voltage on the magnetizing inductance over one switching period, it's equal to 0, and that's equal to 1 over TS times the integral of this waveform in each of the subintervals. It's going to look like VG T1 plus in subinterval 2, it's going to look like VG minus V over N over 2 times T2, and then minus V over N times T3 plus T4 plus T5 plus T6. So rearranging and grouping my terms in terms of VG and minus V over N, I'm going to have is VG times T1 plus T2 over 2 minus V over N times T2 over 2 plus T3 plus T4 plus T5 plus T6 times 1 over TS, whole thing, equal to 0. I can multiply through by TS, and then I'm going to rearrange and solve for an expression V over NVG. That's going to look like a T1 plus T2 over 2 over T2 over 2 plus T3 plus T4 plus T5 plus T6. Okay. This thing here is my transformer, is my turns ratio, or my conversion ratio. With the transformer turns taken into account for the flyback. This is what we called M in 481, which is usually a function of duty cycle. I'm not going to write this as M because that will normalize with our current normalization, where our V base is VG plus V over N. Here we're normalizing by just NVG. But if I wanted to put this into my state plane notation, what I would do is basically over here on the right, I could multiply top and bottom by omega naught. And what I would get is theta 1 plus theta 2, which is your subinterval, theta 2 over 2 plus alpha plus theta 4 plus theta plus theta 6. And by multiplying by omega naught over omega naught, I haven't changed anything, so this is still my V over NVG. So that's the expression that I get out of averaging my voltage on the magnetizing inductance. This is somewhat similar to what we would have gotten in the simple PWM case. In the simple case where we neglect all of the resonant switching transitions and any contribution of this leakage inductance, what we would have done is we would have called this DTS, the time that the FET is on, and this D prime TS, the time that the diode is on, and this subinterval 2 would have gone to zero length. We'd assume that that's instantaneous. And what we would get here is D over D prime as my conversion ratio with the N already put into the V over VG, which is what we know is the conversion ratio of the isolated flyback. So everything makes some sense there. And the last equation to write here is averaging the output current, which in the buck case, as mentioned, lost my buck, averaging the output was akin to averaging the inductor current. And what that was saying is like applying cap charge balance to the output cap. Here we do the same thing. If I apply cap charge balance to the output cap, I'm saying it's the average of ID1 is equal to the average of Iout. What I'm going to do to make my analysis a little bit easier is I'm going to, instead of looking at the average of ID1, I'm going to look at the average of N times ID1, which will save me writing a lot of N's and allow it to be a little bit more intuitive to sketch this waveform. So in order to figure out what this N times ID1 is, which is the current through the primary coil, what I need to do is look at this note here and realize I have KCL, where I have the magnetizing current, capital IM, flowing into this node, and the leakage inductance current, IL, flowing out of it. So I end up with an expression, N times ID1 equal to IM minus IL. That's always true. So if I average this, average of N times ID1 over a switching period is equal to my average output current, Iout. That's equal to the average over a switching period of this expression here. IM is constant, so its average will just be IM minus average of IL. If I sketch the waveform to perhaps make it a little bit easier to analyze here for my output diode current, N times ID1 versus time through my subintervals here, it's going to be zero whenever the leakage inductor current is IM, and then during subintervals 3 through 5 and 6, it's just going to look like a flipped version of this inductor current and shift it down by IM. So if I sketch that here, it's going to begin in subinterval 3, 4, 5, and 6. It'll be zero during the rest of the time. Here it'll begin to resonate up. It'll ramp up, resonant interval, ramp down. So my values of N times ID1 here are going to be IM minus whatever the values of the inductive current were. So here I'll be IM minus I3. Here I'll be IM minus negative I4, IM plus I4. Here I'll be IM plus I5. So from this waveform, I can write an expression for my Iout, which is average of this current. It's going to look like 1 over Ts times the integral from 0 to Ts of, back here, I forgot an N on Iout, excuse me for that. So it's going to look like the integral of N times ID1 d dt. That's going to look like 1 over ts times the integral during each of these subintervals where it's non-zero. That's going to be q3 plus q4 plus q5 plus q6, where, for example, sketch q4 is this. And q3, q5, q6, similarly, the area under the curve during that subinterval. I'm going to write expressions for these charges. So q3 in subinterval 3, this is my resonant transition. And during this transition, in my state plane, my VDS voltage goes from Vg plus V over N up to Vs. So I have a charge of C times Vs minus Vg minus V over N that goes down into the drain to source capacitor of the MOSFET. All of that charge is the charge that, based on my KCL here, does not go through the output. So I'm going to look like at the output, I have the full magnetizing current minus that amount of charge. That's the integral of IL. So my Q3 is going to look like IM times T3 minus the charge that goes into CDS, which is going to be CDS times VS minus VG minus V over N. My Q4 charge, I'm now in a linear subinterval. This one is a little bit easier to solve because we've already said that my I3 and I4 are equal. So my average value of IM minus I3 and IM plus I4 has to be IM. I've already made that argument. So my average charge Q4 is going to be IM times T4. Q5, we are back into a resonant interval. This time we're having charge from the drain to source capacitance being delivered back into the circuit. So that charge is going to add with the integral of IM over this interval. And we're going to get IM times T5. We still have magnetizing current flowing through the output. We're going to get an additional charge of CDS times the delta V during that interval. However, unlike subinterval 3, where we only went from Vg plus V over N to Vs, we now go from Vs all the way down to 0. It's going to look like CDS times Vs. And then in Q6, my last subinterval, what I have is the IM plus I5 over 2 to get the average value during the subinterval times T6. So I sum all these up and add them together, I'll get my average output current, and then I can normalize that in order to get my state plane equation. In interest of time, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to write my expression for the average output current when it's normalized. That's going to look like J, which is equal to my N times I out over I base, is equal to JM times F over 2 pi alpha plus beta plus theta 4 plus theta 6 plus F over 2 pi plus J5 F over 2 pi times theta 6 over 2 with a little bit of algebra manipulation of my normalized form. And that is the complete solution to the active clamp flyback converter operating in CCM. Hopefully this lecture gets recorded much better. As a reminder, this is the last recorded lecture. I'll be back on Friday and we'll hold class during our normally scheduled time and location on Friday. Hope to see you then. Thanks.